Welcome in to another episode of Home Field Advantage. Hope you're all having a great week wherever you may be across our great country or our great land. My name is Will Highland and it is April 7th, 2024, the day before this massive eclipse that will get everyone talking for a day, especially if you live in my neck of the woods and you will have the proverbial path of totality. So lots of people will be all hyped up about that. Probably at the same time you're listening to this. It would be really cool if the whole country got to see this, I guess. But it has a lot of people talking and has a lot of people doing some pretty interesting things. But we're not here to talk about astronomy. In fact, I'm going to start the show not with astronomy, but with geography. And the reason why I'm throwing in this little lesson, I believe you'll catch on pretty quickly, but there are 48 states in the lower part of this nation, excluding Alaska and Hawaii. I am quite known to start every podcast the way I have for the past 5 years with that exact opening. Hope you're all having a great week, blah, 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 across our great country or our great land. Now, I am a Boston sports fan by trade. I am a Boston sports commentator and blogger and writer by trade. That's how I came up. That's what I know. There are a lot of things about the sports world that I don't know. And one thing that happens when I podcast about sports or write about sports is, you know, I tend to be pretty Boston and New England and even Maine centric. Focus a lot on the Red Sox, focus a lot on the Pats, the Bruins, the Celtics, college teams up here. But there's a part of our country, and this podcast isn't intended for everyone. There's a part of our country that's called flyover country. There's a part of our country that gets left behind in the sports conversation. They don't have any pro teams. Their college teams are very regional. And the month of March / early April, during March Madness, is when they're able to show the country who they are. Right? Like, there's a lot of states in the mid-America, in the middle part of this country, who are made up of people who don't get a lot of limelight. They don't live in New York City or Boston or Miami or LA or Seattle or Las Vegas. They don't live in Dallas or Houston or even Detroit and Chicago. They live in places like Cedar Rapids and Sioux City and Indianapolis and Fort Wayne and South Bend and Omaha, or even smaller places, you know, places I can't even tell you about, places I've never been, probably will never go. But all across these middle America, quote unquote, flyover states, the same states that you might only hear about when talking about presidential primaries, the Electoral College, or the state capital quiz you learn about in grade school. These are the places where they thrive in March Madness. And in particular, one state has gotten a lot of attention, and that's Iowa. Iowa got a lot of attention for their primary a few months ago. They get a lot of attention for their state fair and for all that stuff, for corn and for Field of Dreams. But I just watched the women's national championship game between Iowa and South Carolina. Two states that probably only get attention at college sports and politics. And Iowa, led by Caitlin Clark, led by their coach and others and their role players, just fell. I believe the final score was 85 or 80, I think it was 87, 72, something along those lines. I didn't pull it up in front of me. South Carolina finished their season undefeated. Dawn Staley, their coach, probably the best coach in college sports right now, in terms of what she was able to accomplish over the last 2 years. They have not lost since last Final Four last year against Iowa. So I'm taking nothing away from South Carolina in this little soliloquy, but a state like Iowa, who produces a homegrown superstar like Caitlin Clark, who has undoubtedly transformed the way people of all sexes look at sports. I barely watched the Women's March Madness in prior years. To me, it was just, I'm not a big basketball guy. I barely watched Men's March Madness. But what she's done for the popularity of that sport, even in defeat, last year losing to LSU, her team, this year losing to South Carolina, two phenomenal programs. She put Iowa on the map in sports. I mean, what else sports-wise does Iowa have? They have the Hawkeyes, right? Like, that's Iowa State, I guess, right? You know, people might poke at me on that, but they are a Hawkeye state, right? The Hawkeyes. That's what they have. Their football team, the big joke is that they can't score, right? A big defensive games, tight end you, whatever you want to call them. But what else did they have before Caitlin Clark on the national stage? Because I saw the commercials, I see the endorsements, I see the State Farm ads, I see the Gatorade ads, I see her raking in the cash with name, image, and likeness. I saw that packed arena where they were having the watch party. You know, that's what she's done for her state, where she's from. And that's what she's done for the game that she played, even in defeat. And so when we talk about these flyover states, right, it's a term used in country songs. It's a term used in poetry, in literature, in movies, in politics. But in sports, it's flyover country where the NCAA tournament, especially in basketball, where there's 64 teams in each, for men and women. That's where these flyover states get to have their limelight. I mean, other than some college football programs, when do you ever talk about Kansas? When do you talk about Indiana? I mean, they have the Pacers and the Colts, but from a sports context, Notre Dame maybe? But now you got Purdue on the men's side. When do you ever talk about any of these small town programs? Think about Creighton. Can you tell me where Creighton is? Well, it's in Omaha, Nebraska. Nobody would know that if not for the NCAA tournament. So over the last few weeks, watching this nationwide, you saw some amazing stories. Not only Caitlin Clark, who I just talked about, you saw an NC State men's team make it to the Final Four, winning 9 in a row, including the conference championship, upsetting some big programs like Baylor, Duke, getting to the Final Four. And showing the world that watches basketball that it's not a fluke when an 11 seed beats a 4. It's not a fluke when an 11 seed beats a 6 or a 4. They deserve to be there. They had some great players. You know, DJ Burns, DJ Horn, Middlebrooks. And then Alabama, Grant Nelson and others. Tremendous. Tremendous teams. Mark Sears. They fell in the Final Four to Purdue and UConn. Look, UConn looks unbeatable. I like them tomorrow night over Purdue. I mean, Zach Edey's playing really good. He didn't play as good, or as well, I should say, against NC State than he did against Tennessee. But this is the time, right? March Madness is the time. And that's something that I've gathered over the last few weeks is these other places, they get their jazz when it comes to pro sports. You know, LA, San Francisco, Seattle, Boston, New York, Philadelphia, DC. But places like North Carolina, like Connecticut, like Iowa, Kansas, Nebraska, they deserve their shot in the limelight. And last but not least, South Carolina. I mean, I watched that game a few minutes ago. South Carolina was a better rebounding team. They were a better team off the bench. They at one point were outscoring the Hawkeyes off the bench 36-0. I think if you had those two teams play and it was only their starting five, I think each team might win 5 out of 10. I think their starting five was really comparable. But South Carolina, it's a testament to Don Saley's coaching. They were deeper. They were better in the paint. They were better in the clutch situations when there was a push and a pull. And that's why they finished the season undefeated. And I think you're going to see the same thing from UConn tomorrow night. It's not a mistake why UConn was a favorite going into this tournament. It's not a mistake that South Carolina was a favorite going into this tournament and that both are likely going to win. I mean, South Carolina already won, but you know what I mean. I think UConn probably wins because of how deep they are. It hasn't been 100% easy for the Huskies, and it wasn't always easy for the South Carolina women. But at the end of the day, in this tournament, one thing I've noticed over the last month watching it is the depth matters. Because when teams get into foul trouble and you got to replace players, that's what led NC State to big wins. That's what led Alabama to big wins. I think it was Alabama that beat Duke. I'm sorry. Or was it Alabama that beat Duke? No, Alabama beat North Carolina. That was the game. But in that game, it was Alabama's depth that won them that game. You know? But it was also the depth of UConn last night on Saturday that led them to their win over the Crimson Tide. So two takeaways from March Madness. It's all about depth in the bench. And the second thing would be give these small states their due. Look, I'm from a small state. Nobody cares about us. Nobody nationwide cares about us in sport, from a sports context. You know, we don't have that. I mean, we had the Black Bears make it essentially the Sweet 16 of men's college hockey, and the women's basketball team is very good from the University of Maine. But, you know, we don't get our limelight from a sports context. And we have some minor league teams that draw well and do a good job. But it's going to be next year. When Cooper Flagg plays for Duke, that's going to be when Maine sort of gets its national sports credit. But we'll have to wait a year for that to happen. All right, speaking of waiting a year for something to happen, I've waited a year. The Bruins are back in the NHL playoffs. They clinched since the last time I recorded a podcast. They also had a huge win over the Florida Panthers yesterday in overtime. That didn't allow them to clinch the Atlantic Division, but they are clearly in the driver's seat, a 5-point lead with 4 games left. They do have some tough games on their schedule. They have to play the Hurricanes, and they have to play the Capitals again, who are battling for a playoff spot. But at least that's who I thought. I could be mistaken. I think the Bruins are playing. I'm second guessing myself. I think they're playing the Capitals. They're playing the Hurricanes. And they're playing Pittsburgh and Ottawa. So they're playing Pittsburgh and Washington, who are both trying for a playoff spot. And they're going to play Ottawa at home to end the year. And then they got Carolina tomorrow night or Tuesday night. So it remains to be seen, I digress, where they're going to be in the playoff bracket, so to speak. But I've been waiting a year for them to get another crack at the Stanley Cup playoffs. They're not out of the woods in terms of winning the President's Trophy and having that curse hang on them again. Which, by the way, quick detour. The Bruins lose Patrice Bergeron, David Krejci, Taylor Hall, Nick Foligno, Garnet Hathaway, and Dmitry Orlov from their team. Not to mention, they have that big letdown in the postseason. They come back this year, and with four games to go, they're still in the President's Trophy conversation. I think Montgomery should win Coach of the Year. He's not going to again, but think about that. Think about losing all those pieces and then essentially being in the same place you were a year ago relative to the rest of the league. Like, they're not miles ahead like they were last year, and frankly, I'm glad they aren't. But you can't take that coaching job away. You know, I think it's going to end up going to Patrick Roy if the Islanders make the playoffs. I really do. I find that crazy that he was able to jump in midway and win the Jack Adams. That's my personal thought. You know, I like what Rod Brindamore did in Carolina with that team and all the roster turnover they've had. And coming back, you know, with all those injuries to start the year and whatnot, thinking around the rest of the league. I think Vancouver, you know, that's probably going to be Vancouver's coach, whose name is escaping me right now. I'm going to lose my mind if I don't think of that. I'm going to Google that really fast. Vancouver Canucks head coach. Oh, Rick Tocchet, of course. Of course it's Rick Tocchet. But anyway, it's probably going to be Rick Tocchet or Patrick Roy, possibly. Could be Rod Brindamore, could be somebody else. But to sort of end this detour, I wouldn't be totally opposed to having Jim Montgomery win it. Biases aside, speaking of UMaine sports, alum of University of Maine, Jim Montgomery. But I'm of the opinion that this Bruins team, being where they are, a year removed from that big playoff letdown, they are capable of beating every team in the NHL. They are capable of beating every team in the NHL. And that's just not my bias talking. All right? It isn't. They are... let's pull this out here. I deleted my note. I believe there was something like 16-2-4 against the other 10 best teams in the league. So there's the Bruins, and then there's the 10 other best teams in the league. And they're 16-2-4 against those teams. I believe that's what I had written down. So they're capable of beating anybody. They've had slip-ups. They haven't looked great against particular teams like the Flyers or the Lightning. Those are also teams the Bruins could end up playing in the first round of the playoffs. More likely Tampa Bay, but it could also be Philadelphia. They haven't looked great against Detroit. Detroit probably won't make the playoffs. And there's been some games against Pittsburgh where they've been shaky. But by and large, this Bruins team has performed well against everyone. I believe they're 2-0 against the Stars, for example, over in the West. They're 4-0 against the Florida Panthers. They're 4-0 against the Maple Leafs. So they're 8-0 against the two other best teams in their division. So I'm of the opinion that they could beat anybody. But I'm also of the opinion that they could lose to anybody because they're not an incredibly deep team. I like the way they're playing. They're getting production out of their fourth line, whether that be Brazil before he got hurt or Jesper Boqvist yesterday or whomever. They're getting production out of their bottom six. But what they really need is their middle six to play well, because that's what's going to help them win a cup if they do. It's going to be how DeBrusque plays. It's going to be how guys like James Van Riemsdyk play in the playoffs, or Trent Frederick or Charlie Coyle. That's what's going to lead this Bruins team to win. I think Marchand is a little snake bitten, but you know, he's a guy that rises to the occasion in the playoffs. Danton Heinen has played really well. He's kind of seems like a playoff guy to me. The scary thing about this Bruins team from a fan's perspective is, you know, the goalies are doing really well, but at either day, either Swayman or Ullmark, I'd take them to win you any series. I'd also take them to have a really ugly game in a postseason, because we've seen ugly games out of Linus in the postseason, and we've seen Jeremy Swayman, to his credit or to not his credit, be on the ice the last 3 years when the Bruins have been eliminated. 2021 against the Islanders, he relieved Tuukka Rask when Rask was injured. 2022 against the Hurricanes, Swayman came into that series late, I believe. And I believe he started Game 7. And then last year against the Florida Panthers, Linus Ullmark started the first six games, but it was Swayman who started Game 7. That 2022 series is makes me want to fact check myself, but I'm quite certain that Swayman has been on the ice the last 3 years when the Bruins have been eliminated. But Linus Ullmark has started the series in two of those three times, and including both times when Ullmark's been a member of the Bruins. So I digress. There's been a ton. Yes, it was in overtime. Oh, wait, no, this was last year. Stepping back here, 21-2022 Bruins season. Yeah. Ullmark started the first two, and then Swayman started the next five. Swayman went 3-2 in that Carolina series in 2022. Including a Game 7 loss, 3-2. Yikes. But he did help the Bruins back in the series. He didn't allow more than two goals. Interestingly enough, I'm looking at this. Swayman has started 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 in 2022. And he started... He started 1 in 2023. So he started 6 games. I know this is great. This is great content right here. Me doing math. And he started... Okay. So he started 7 postseason games. He's 3-4. And he's allowed 2 goals or less in 5 of those 7 games. So he's giving you a shot. You know, Swayman's giving you a shot. And, you know, backtracking here to talk about the goalie discussion. But I don't know who the Bruins are going to pick. It seems like they're leaning Ullmark. That's fine. Linus is great. He's won the Vezina. He's been there for the Bruins the last 2 years in the regular season and done handsomely. The question is, you know, if you're a Bruins fan, whether it be about the goalie or the lineup or whatever, is who do you want to play? Right now, I think there's probably four teams that I would identify as being the most likely for the Bruins to play. Number one would be the Tampa Bay Lightning. That seems to be the most likely scenario because the Rangers are probably going to end up being number one overall seed in the East, which means they'll play the second wild card. Second wild card could be anybody. It could be the Flyers. It could be the Capitals. It could be the Islanders. It could be the Penguins. It could be really anybody like that. The first wild card is pretty much wrapped up. That's going to be the Tampa Bay Lightning. So the Bruins would then play the first wild card, which would be Tampa Bay, assuming that the Rangers end up being the number one overall seed in the East. If the Bruins win their division but are still able to overtake the Rangers for the number one overall seed in the East, that also means they probably win the President's Trophy, which I do not want. Then you have the Bruins playing one of those litany of teams that are in the conversation for the second wild card: Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Washington, New York Islanders, somebody like that. I think feel like there's somebody else I'm forgetting. But it's probably going to be one of those teams. So that's probably the number one scenario, is that they're going to play Tampa. Number two scenario would be they play the second wild card, which at this point I would identify as being either the Flyers or the Penguins. Could be the Capitals, but the Bruins are playing the Capitals, so I like that. I like them winning that game, so that would hurt. That would hurt the Capitals' chances of making the playoffs. But the third scenario, and the fourth team they could play beyond the Lightning, the Flyers, or the Penguins, would be the Toronto Maple Leafs. Which, if you're a Bruins fan, you'd love that, because they were 4-0 against the Leafs this year. They routinely beat the Leafs in the playoffs. But that has the potential to be really good TV and really heartbreaking. And look, I'm just going to say this right now. Same people that are excited about the Bruins possibly playing the Leafs, that's how Tampa feels about playing us. Right? Because Tampa has beaten the Bruins. I think the Bruins have split with Tampa, or they're 1-3. I don't have the schedule in front of me. I really should have looked that up. We'll look at it more when I talk to Diesel next week, doing another episode of Odd Man Rush. But the Bruins fans are excited about possibly playing the Leafs and then making Tampa play Florida and having those two rivalries go at one another. But Tampa probably says, oh, I want Boston to win the division. First of all, I don't want to play Florida, and I don't want to play the Rangers. I want to play Boston, because we've beaten Boston in the playoffs in 2018 and 2020. The Lightning have beaten up on the Bruins this year. And historically, our team that the Bruins don't 100% match up well against. They're old and scary and physical, a lot like Bruins teams of the years past. And they got a really good goalie. I think Vasilevsky still, despite having a down year to his standards, is better than most guys in the league, if not top five in the world. So just keep that in mind. The only other team that I haven't really talked a lot about that the Bruins could play is the New York Islanders. The New York Islanders, like I said, led by Waugh, are doing insane things in the second half, finding themselves in playoff consideration and contention. But I don't want anything to do with the New York Islanders. After 2021, after some of the games the Bruins have played against the Islanders this year, horrible games, where they've completely looked like crap. I don't want to play Tampa, I don't want to play the Islanders, and I don't want to play the Panthers till the second round. I don't think we're going to play the Panthers till the second round if we make it that far. The math just doesn't work out. So I am scared of ghosts of Bruins past. Because if you go back to when this secondary run first started, it was really the 2017-18 season, right? That was the emergence of McAvoy. That was the emergence of this younger group. Heinen was actually a part of that before he left the first time. You know, you had Pasternak emerge really back then. So that was the start of this new wave of Bruins teams. And back then, Cassidy was the coach. In 18, you beat the Leafs. Congratulations. Then you moved on and you got absolutely waxed by the Lightning. Then in 2019, you had that enormous cup run that was awesome and everybody loved it. But you didn't really beat anybody good. You beat the Leafs again, beat the Blue Jackets, and then you beat the Hurricanes when the Hurricanes were still ascending. Then you lost in the cup final. 2020, they beat the Hurricanes again. Great. 2 years in a row, eliminated Carolina. But you then lost to Carolina in 2022. And I think that the Bruins played them, it would certainly be in the conference final at this point. If they lose in the conference final to Carolina, I'll just take that at face value. But I'm not really thinking about them right now. I'm thinking about Tampa and the bad history the Bruins have with the Lightning. I'm thinking about in 2021 when the Islanders took care of us quite handily from a physical perspective. And I'm thinking about the fact that both of these teams are well-coached, John Cooper and Patrick Waugh are doing a great job with those teams this year. And I just think they'd be bad matchups for the Bruins. I also don't really love the Philadelphia matchup. Philadelphia took care of us a couple Saturdays ago. Bruins looked flat. There was also another game where there was a lot of back and forth scoring with the Flyers. I think the Bruins have the edge in net. I think the Bruins have the edge on D, but I think 5-on-5 would be a really tight series. And one thing about this Bruins team is we haven't seen them play particularly well in 3-on-3. You know, I saw an asinine tweet earlier that the Bruins are only going to win their division because they're really good in overtime. That's what somebody wrote, because they win a lot of overtime games. In fact, I think it's quite the opposite. I think the Bruins lose a lot of overtime games. I think they're a good 5-on-5 team. I think their power play and their penalty kill have struggled, and I don't think they're very good 3-on-3. And so, no, the reason why they're in playoff contention and have clinched and will be probably winning the division unless something changes drastically in the next four games, they are doing so at the despite playing poorly in overtime. So I think the Bruins going into a series being 5-on-5, whether it's Philly or any of these other clubs, they'd be pretty good 5-on-5. What scares me is power play and penalty kill. We'll have a lot of time to break that down when we get closer to the playoffs, and the matchups are actually set. But if I'm picking one of these teams that I would feel decent about the Bruins playing, it would be the Capitals or the Penguins. I'd feel pretty good about that. Not saying they'd sweep or win in five. I'm not going to be an idiot like last year when I think I said Bruins in six. I underestimated Florida. I'm not going to underestimate anybody. I think the Bruins could easily win the Stanley Cup, and I think they could easily lose to anybody, right? That's how. And when I say easily, I don't mean it's going to be easy for them to do it. I'm saying that meaning it's easy to predict, right? Because you could predict anything and be right. So it's sort of a backwards way of looking at it. But you want to predict them to lose in the first round? Cool. If you want to predict them to win the Stanley Cup? Cool. Both of you probably have a decent shot of being correct. So that's what I mean by that. So I would say Pittsburgh or Washington. The thing about that, though, is if you end up playing one of those teams, you're going to be playing a team just like last year with the Panthers that's red hot and coming in the playoffs, that had to fight like hell the last few weeks to get there. And so perhaps they're better off playing the Lightning. I've just watched them play Tampa this year, and it didn't look the same. I think Tampa's really strong defensively. I think, you know, they still have guys that have won cups. Everyone talks about, oh, this isn't the same Lightning team. I'm looking around, okay. Braden Point, Steven Stamkos, Victor Hedman, Nikita Kucherov. Looks like a pretty good team to me. All those guys have won a cup there. Sure, you know, Blake Coleman left. Some of these other guys have left. But, you know, they got Taryn Janot. They got a lot of good guys on that team. So, long story short, from If I was a Bruins fan, sure, it would be fun to play the Leafs. We've owned the Leafs. You know, but the Hurricanes were also 4-0 against the Bruins in 2022, and Bruins took them to 7 games, even though they lost. Like, so regular season does not equal playoff success against a particular team, is all I'm saying. All right, I'd be interested to hear what you all think about that. All right, closing up real quick. Next week, we're gonna talk some NBA because Celtics look like a team that can't lose. They just look like a team that can't lose. They win every single game that I look up at the score. They win. They win games by 20. They win games by 2. They win games by 10. They just win games. So at this point, they are the favorite in the East until they're not. So we're going to talk about that more next week. The way I want to wrap this up real quick is evaluating the Red Sox start. Last week or 2 weeks ago before the storm, before Easter, I did a preview on the season. I think the Red Sox would be a strong team at the top, but had holes on the bottom. And they could not afford a lot of injuries. Their starting pitching has done really well the first few games of the year. They started out 6-2, I believe. Now they're 6-3. They're playing right now. But here's the thing. They can't afford any injuries, and they just had a huge one. Trevor Story, shoulder injury, will be evaluated. We'll have an MRI. Does not look good. He's probably going to miss a couple months at the very least. So you're going to have something to do at shortstop. David Hamilton played today, hit a home run. Not sure what that's going to look like going forward. They don't have a lot of depth, right? This is what I talked about. This is what I was afraid of. So it remains to be seen how they're going to plug these holes. But I think regardless of whether they win or lose today and they come home 7-3 or 6-4, feel decent about this Red Sox team. Sometimes these start of the year road trips end up so badly. Think about 2011, 2019, some of these years where they started out with a huge long road trip and they were, you know, really, really bad by the end of it. You come out on top, you know, with a winning record no matter what, which they will. You can start to build momentum, hopefully, when you're in the friendly confines of Fenway Park. All right, speaking of friendly confines, the Sea Dogs opened up their season today after postponing the first two due to the snowstorm we had in New England on Thursday. They had to postpone both yesterday's game, Saturday, and Friday night's opener. They started out, though, today, and I caught a glimpse of their lineup. And if you want any, as I mentioned in the preview of the Red Sox, if you want any positivity for the future, I looked at the Sea Dogs lineup. Marcelo Meyer, Roman Anthony, Kyle Teal, Blaze Jordan, Nick York, top five. Looks pretty good to me. So hopefully the friendly confines of Hadlock Field will provide entertaining baseball for those of us here in the Pine Tree State who are otherwise sports irrelevant. But until next time, I hope you tune in. This is going to do it for this episode of Home Field Advantage. It's going to be a good week ahead. We'll wrap it all up with another pod at the end of the week. I'll have Kyle in the program with me talking more NHL as we head toward the Stanley Cup playoffs. But as I said, that's going to do it for this episode of Home Field Advantage. If you liked this podcast, please subscribe on your favorite provider, including Spotify, Apple, Google, and Stitcher. Be sure to also check us out 2 times a week on those platforms, on Monday and on Thursday. All of the Sportland USA programs are independent, and the opinions expressed in them do not reflect those of any other company, outlet, person, or entity.